started building a pyramid fire with the ends of burn sticks and some of the sticks from the dry pile and waited for it all to take and a nice yellow flame to come out. The wind was catching the smoke and sending it straight away from me, so the wind was a northwesterly and it was starting to blow. I got the kettle and ran down to the burn to get water. In the SAS Survival Handbook, it tells you to always filter water, even if it comes from a running burn. But I read in other places that so long as you boil it, it's safe because boiling kills bacteria like Viles disease, which comes from infected rodent urine, and also kills parasites and flukes. The burn was bubbling and rushing, and there was a stone where you came out of the woods where you could kneel and fill the kettle in a fast-moving bit that ran over smooth rock. And as I knelt to fill the kettle, I looked up, and there was a deer. There was enough light to make it out, standing still as a stone and staring straight at me from only about 6 metres away on the other bank. It was a young doe, and I froze as still as it. And we stayed like that, paused like a DVD and staring. And I tried to become aware of my breathing, so I didn't think and move. And so I wouldn't feel the cold stone under my knees. And my breathing slowed, so it was soon so slow I didn't know it. Then I felt a sensation, like someone very gently tapping the bottom of my spine. Slowly just tapping. And I saw things starting to drop down around the deer, like little pricks of light. And they dropped with each slow tap. I stopped feeling the stone under my knees, and hearing the burn bubble and the leaves moving. The air stopped going in and out of my lungs, and I felt light and then not there. And just looking out again at the deer and the lights that dropped in lines like rain coming down dead straight. The deer just moved out of my vision like someone leaving a picture. It moved slow and calm and made no noise. Then the sun was up, and a slice of it was pushing over the top of the mountain above the forest, and I stood up and walked back to the shelter with the kettle full. Peppa was awake and squatting by the fire, and she was eating a Dundee cake, and she said, "I want tea, Sal." She fed sticks into the fire, and I put the kettle on the frame to boil, and we got the enamel cups, and I put tea bags in them. We had loads of tea bags. I said, "We're not going to hunt, dear." And Peppa said, "All right." Then she said, "How long have we been here?" And I thought for a minute and said, "I can't remember." And I couldn't. I knew it was days and nights, but I couldn't remember how many. And in my mind, I went through all the last day cooking the rabbit and doing the skin on the hoop of the alder and Peppa doing slingshot and snaring the rabbit and the big trout, and the worm in Peppa's fingers, and seeing the warren, and Peppa calling Bear a wanker, and coming down the slope in the sun, and going through the wood, and eating Velveeta's for breakfast, and waking up and feeling Peppa to see if she was cold, and then being asleep. And then there was the day before, and I might have built the shelter that day, or I might have built it the day before that, or before that, and dug the latrine, and a long walk over from Glentrowell with a rucksack and sweating in the sun. And I didn't know when that was or if it was yesterday. Peppa said, "You all right, Sal?" I think I started to panic then because my breathing got fast and I felt butterflies in my chest. I only panic if I can't remember things I need to or if I don't know where I am or if we lose the map or the compass. When I tried to go into my memory for the days just past, it felt like a big mush and I didn't get the pictures and things in order. I got a big rush and mush. The number never just came into my head like it had. Then I got the tapping on my spine again and started to see the little light pricks dropping slowly. And I started to get more calm. And I tried to become aware of my breathing and felt calmer. And the little lights dropped down in the wood behind Peppa's head. And then I went warm and wanted to smile. I said, "I couldn't remember." And Peppa said, "Never mind, doesn't matter." And she was right, it didn't. I tried for things that did matter. And I got that the size 10 and 12 hooks and the split shot were zipped into the inner pocket of the top part of the rucksack with the wire traces and the plastic pack of spinners, and I had the rabbit liver and heart and kidneys on a stone for bait, and the rod was 2.3 metres fully extended. Further back, I got the way to tie a blood knot for the hook onto the line and how to tie it in the trace with a dropper to take 3 split shot to make a single ledger rig for the bottom fishing. And I got taught all that by Ian Leckie, Mary's papa, who had been in the army and had been on the fishing boats, and once took me and Mary fishing off the wall, and we got a cod and a saithe. I said to Peppa, "Let's go fishing." At the lock, the wind was up, and there was a big ripple on the water. The fish would be down and not on top like yesterday. And the wind was cold, and stratus cloud covered all the blue sky. Stratus cloud means rain or snow, and with the wind hammering up the lock from the northwest, it felt like it would be snow. I showed Peppa how to cast a spinner, and we got 2 trout and a small perch. Then she dug for worms, and I tried ledgering the rabbit liver on a size 10 as far out as I could cast, but I didn't get a bite. We used the 3 worms Peppa found, and we got another trout and a big perch with black stripes and a spiky dorsal fin like a sail. But the wind was getting too strong and cold for us, and it started to spit sleet and went dark. We went back to the shelter and had Dundee cake and Belvitas and tea. And then we collected as much wood as we could and made a really big stack, and I built a long fire again. Then I went over to the bracken and dug up a big bunch of bracken roots and cleaned and washed them in the burn. They were fat and long and pure white. You can eat them roasted and they contain carbohydrates, but you can't eat too many because they can give you cancer. But you have to eat a lot. The poison in bracken is called tequilicide, and it is destroyed by heat. The snow started as it was getting dark with the wind driving into the back of the shelter, and it made it all white, and the tarp sagged a bit on top of the paracord. I roasted the fish and the roots on a flat stone with salt on them, and we used the split stone for plates, and the roasted roots tasted like chips, and Peppa ate loads of them. The fish was nice, but the perch skin was jaggy, and you couldn't eat it, but the flesh was white and sweet. Then we had tea with UHT milk and sugar. It was lovely snuggling in the shelter and the sleeping bag, with both blankets, watching the snow swirling in the firelight and hearing the wind. Chapter 4. Snow. Sometimes, when I was about 9 and Peppa was 6 and Ma wasn't too bad with a drink, she would tell us about her dad. It was before Robert came and after a man called Eddie Bean, who used to come and smoke weed with Ma and stay the night. Ma was 16 when I was born and my dad was called Jimmy and he was blonde and he supported Rangers and Ma went to school with him and she said she loved him. And they got a flat together when I was in her belly. Then my dad got killed in a car he was in with 3 other lads going into Glasgow. And the other boys all survived. One was in a wheelchair and he was called Pally. And you sometimes saw him in his chair going in the spar. My dad got killed because he was in the front seat and he didn't have a seatbelt on and they were all drunk. Ma said she cried and cried and the council gave her a new flat. Our flat in a block that has a balcony. And you can see the firth in the wall and the lighthouse right out at the end of the wall, and at night it flashes once every 45 seconds. Our flat had 3 bedrooms, a kitchen, a bathroom with a shower and a bath, and a living room with a door out onto the balcony. I mostly had wash and drying on the balcony. She brought me back to that flat after I was born, and for nearly 2 years she looked after me, and she says she didn't drink or smoke weed, and she was doing an apprenticeship at Cuts in the precinct, learning to be a hairdresser. Sometimes when she was out, I got looked after by Mary's papa, Ian Leckie, and her nana, who was called Pat. And they knew my mum because she had been in school with Mary's mum, and Mary was born 3 months before me. Mary's mum wasn't there, and when I asked Ma where she was, Ma made a face and said, "I can't tell you, darling, but she got in a bad way is all I know." Mary and me were babies together a lot, and we had a playpen in our papa's house, which was down by the wall, and had a garden and a shed. Ma said she met Peppa's dad in a nightclub, and he was a Nigerian student who was from the southeast of Nigeria and was from a tribe called the Igbo. He was tall and his skin was brown, and Ma said he was gorgeous. He was learning to be an architect and he played football for the college, and he could speak English and Igbo and four other Nigerian languages, and also French and a bit of Arabic and Italian, and he knew Latin. I think that's maybe why Peppa is clever and learned to read very quickly. And she also likes words, especially swearing. And she reads books, which I don't, except the SAS Survival Handbook. Peppa's dad's name was Kenneth, and Ma said he liked her because she was curvy, which means she had big tits. And she liked him because he was a gentleman and had a lovely speaking voice. She said Peppa is like her da, and I am like my da, because I'm tall and blonde, and I've got big eyes and a big mouth like him, and I'm getting muscles on my arms. Peppa's dad was a Catholic, and my dad was a Protestant. I think I remember Peppa's dad from when I was only about 3, and I was on the balcony, and he was with me, and he lifted me up, and he was laughing. He smelled of perfume, and his hands were soft, and he held me, and we looked at the lighthouse. There was about 10 centimetres of snow in the morning, and we got the fire going again, and had tea, and then went to check on the snares, and we'd got another rabbit. There were tracks in the snow. I found rabbit, red deer, fox, and, I think, red squirrel under an oak tree. But I think squirrels hibernate, so it might have been a bird. We collected more wood, then I had to look at the shelter because the snow had dragged the tarp down. I made the shelter the day we got here in the afternoon after we had walked 5 miles in the sun with all the gear. It was hard, and we had to keep stopping and having drinks of water. I used the map and the compass to plot the route we took right up the side of Loch Trull, on a forestry road opposite the other road where we saw some cars through the trees. It was easy on the forest road, but when we got to the end of the loch, we had to go up and ascend over 500 metres to the top of the ridge. There was a sheep path on the first bit up over the grassy slopes with big rocks, but it got steeper as we went higher, and Peppa had to stop, and so did I. We just did a bit at a time and took it slow, which is what they all say on the websites when you're climbing up. The shelter was made by stringing paracord across between two birch trees and then fixing the tarp with the Velcro flaps to it and pulling it back to the ground so it was at an angle of about 60 degrees, which is the best angle for shedding water. Then I held it down at the back with rocks and used more rocks to make 3 plinths under it, then cut the poles of birch to make the bed. Peppa got spruce branches and we laid them all over the poles, and we used a lot so they were thick and insulated. And they prickled a bit, but once they are pressed down, they are very soft and comfortable. You have to build the bed platform off the ground to stop heat loss. We did all this after the 5 miles with all the gear to the most remote part of the forest I could find on the map, which also had access to water and was in the trees. But after the weight of the snow, the tarp had got all pulled and rucked at the bottom, and the paracord had stretched and sagged, and the middle of the tarp was getting a V in it, which would let in water if it rained. So I decided we needed to make a bender. A bender is a type of shelter that has loads of saplings arched across each other to make a dome shape. There was a diagram of one in the handbook, and it said it was a good shelter for longer term use, which is what we wanted. I would cover it with the tarp and then spruce branches to insulate it. When I told Peppa we were going to make a bender, she grinned and said, "Ha, aye, we are going to make a bender because you're a bender," and she giggled a lot. She's always saying I'm a lesbian, but I'm not, and she is only joking, but it is a bit homophobic. But it isn't, because I'm not gay. But when my hair is pulled back or I wear it under a hat, I do look like a lad. Some things make Peppa laugh so much she can't stand up and she has spasms, and sometimes you think she's an epileptic. One thing that makes her laugh like that is the word hummus. When we were wee, and I used to steal her food, I got her some hummus in a tub, and she loved eating it with the bread dipped in it, and then she asked what it was called, and I told her, and she nearly pissed herself. She also laughs a lot at the word meconium, which is the name of a baby's first poo when they're just born, and it's full of very dangerous bacteria. The word bender for a gay makes her laugh, and so does the word menstruation for having a period. She also likes swear words like wanker and bollocks, and she loves the word jobby, especially if you call someone a jobby. At school, she'd get in trouble for writing Mrs. Gammon is a jobby on sugar paper on a display when she was in P6. If she sees fat people in town or in the precinct, she goes, oh, quick, hide the pies. And this makes me laugh too. And sometimes she goes, oh, someone's found the key to the pie cupboard. She also likes the word bumhole. And she sometimes says, oh, stop being a drippy bumhole if someone is annoying her or going on about stuff. She likes Scots words as well, like glaikit, which means you're thick and your mouth is open and you look like you haven't got an idea in your head. She also likes saying guy for very, and she likes the word dreicht for when it's damp and drizzling and dark. And if it is, she'll go, it's guy dreicht the day. There was a kid in her class with a really big head called Robert McCulloch, and she started calling him Heed, which is Scots for head. And soon, all the other kids in the class were calling him Heed McCulloch, and he liked it because he had a nickname. But Mrs. Gammon said it was bullying, and Peppa said, aye, but it is a guy big Heed, Mrs. Gammon. She did Burns in school and learned the mouse poem, and she sometimes says them. And the bit that is best is, still, thou art blessed, compared with me. The present only toucheth thee. But, ugh, I backward cast my ee on prospects drear, and forward, though, I canna see, I guess in fear. Which he says to the mouse in the nest he's ploughed up, and that is true, and that is how I was in the flat, and how I was for all my life. And I want to be more like the mouse. Peppa calls women hen, like wifeys in shops. And if Ma was drunk, she said she was Uncle Foo. Another good thing about a bender is that we could keep it warm with just a pyramid fire instead of a long fire, and that would use less wood, and that would be another good reason. So I cut the tarp down and shook it off, and then went to look for saplings and thinner branches, and Peppa went and got wood to keep the fire going. I lashed some of the saplings together, thin end to thin end, and made them about 4 metres long, and sharpened the ends and then forced them into the leafy ground. And that was not all that easy, because there are a lot of rocks and stones in the ground, so I put little piles of stones around each one when it was in to hold it. I spaced the poles out about 2 metres apart each and then looped them over and made a dome shape. It was not as easy as it looks in the handbook either. The sun was out now, and some of the snow was getting soft and dripping from the trees, and I was kicking snow and leaves and muck out from around the bed under the new dome frame when I heard the helicopter. It was low and chugging, and I knew what it was as soon as I heard it. I think I had been expecting it. And I shouted in a big whisper, Peppa, get down! She was dragging some wood back towards me, and she just dropped and rolled under a holly bush, and I crouched. I was looking up through the dome frame, and above me I saw it as the noise came louder, going chop, 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 chop. It was white underneath with E90 Rescue in black letters. It was so low I could have hit it with the air gun, probably less than 30 metres. It went right over us under the trees crouching, then it flew still low out towards the lock. I stayed still and shout whispered to Peppa, stay there. Then I sprinted down towards the burn and jumped over the rocks and up the first slope into the trees. The noise was fading, and when I came out in the bracken, it was halfway down the lock, still low. Then Peppa was there beside me in the ferns, and she got hold of my hand and said, is it after us? I said, I don't know. I think it's Mountain Rescue. It had disappeared behind the trees on the other side. Then we started to hear it again, and it came out far over on the other side of the lock, zooming along against the snow on the trees. It was coming back round, and I grabbed Peppa, and we rolled into the bracken, and I pulled it closer on us, and we lay there. The chop, 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 getting louder and louder. and it must have come right back over us, skirting our wood and heading north towards Magna Bra and the moor. The chopping faded. It was cold and damp in the ferns there on the snow and leaves, but I made us stay there and counted to 180, saying elephant in between each number to make it 3 minutes. I said, let's go back. Peppa said, have we got to move now? I said, no, not now. If it's mountain rescue, it means they're looking for someone up there in the snow. That meant there were people up at Magna Bra or on the moors above our wood. I said, come on. And we sprinted back through to the shelter, and I got the map and we sat under the dome frame and looked at it. Magna Bra was at the top of the moor above us, and our wood stopped about a mile from the start of the moor. I'm going to look, I said, and pulled the compass out of the rucksack. I'm coming, Peppa said. No, Peppa, stay here and wait for me. They're looking for two of us. She said, nah, and got up and started sprinting north through the wood. I shouted, but she was gone faster than I could get after her, so I started off. The burn ran north as you followed it all the way to the top of our woods. I was cracking through the sticks and bracken and trees, but I couldn't see Peppa, not even her back. It was all rising ground and the snow was thicker the further you went up. As long as we stayed in the woods, we couldn't be seen from the helicopter or anyone out up on the moor. The trees broke up the outline and against the snow looking in you wouldn't stand out. Plus, my fleece was grey and Peppa's was black and they are good camouflage colours, but not against snow in the open once we got to the top. Following the burn up, you could feel the trees start to thin out and see the moor rising up, and I slowed down and started to creep. And I was puffing from running and getting panicky about Peppa because I still couldn't see her. The sharp wind had started again and was blowing straight into me, and the stratus clouds were moving in from the north, and I kept checking the compass. The wind was whooshing in my ears and I was stooping and running, trying to stay low. Finally, the trees stopped and the burn went on into a gorge with steep sides, and there was a ridge above me, and I could see Peppa lying flat at the top and looking over it. I wished it would get dark so we'd be covered, unless they used a light. I could hear the chop, 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 far off again now as I ran up towards Peppa, and she was peeking over the ridge top by a rock. I got to her and jumped down next to her and peeked over. The moor was huge and white with ridges of snow, and it rose up and there was a hill at the end, and above that another hill. About 150 metres away the helicopter had landed, but the rotors were still going and there were little flashes of orange and yellow from men's coats moving by it, and the snow was starting to come down again. We watched through the snow and they were putting a stretcher in, and there were three guys, two in bright coloured coats and a guy in a blue thing, and it looked like they had another guy on the stretcher. Peppa said, wanky walkers. I said, we need to get back in the woods before they take off. And we backed down the slope and ran back into the woods and got in far enough to be covered. We could hear the helicopter blades getting fast and watched it rise up above the ridge. They couldn't see us and the snow was starting to really blow in. Peppa said, do you know what I fancy? I said, what? And she said, sausages. We didn't have any, but we had a rabbit and we had to finish the bender. So we walked back down the burn into the woods. We had to work fast to finish the bender and stretch the tarp over it. And I made a doorway with an arch-shaped hole and bound it on with a paracord. Then we thatched it with spruce really thick and we put new spruce on the bed because it had got wet. It started to get dark and the snow kept on, but not as bad here as up on the moor, and we got a pyramid fire going just outside the door of the bender and cooked the rabbit. We had tea and Peppa ate the last bit of Dundee cake. The bender was getting covered in snow and inside it felt warm because snow insulates. They were the first people we'd seen since the bus driver on the day we came here. And although I tried not to, I started to worry about it, and then being there and there being walkers and wankers and cagoules up towards Magna Bra, but they hadn't seen us, and they hadn't been looking for us. Chapter 5. Birds. The next day, I made another hoop and scraped the new rabbit skin, and then I used wood ash and oak leaves and whey to make the paste, and I spread it over both of the skins and left them caked on the skin side to cure for the day. Then I washed my hands in the burn. For food, we had 2 boxes of Belvitas, a cherry cake, a bag of brioches, 2 bags of walnuts and 2 bags of almonds and a big bag of raisins left. We needed to hunt again today for our main food, and I decided to try and shoot birds with the air rifle. There are a number of species of birds in the forest and on the moors. For birds of prey, there are red kite, kestrel, sparrowhawk and osprey, but osprey are migratory and they would be gone by now. There are also golden eagles and white-tailed eagles, and I want to see one of those. There are also owls, probably tawny owls. Other migratory birds you can get here are great grey shrike and woodlarks. The birds you can eat are black grouse, and there are also capercaillie. Rich people come up here in August and shoot the grouse on the moor tops, and I wondered if I could get one, even though we only had an air gun and not a shotgun. I thought they would be easy to see with the snow on the ground further up. You needed a jumper because the wind was still northerly, and although there hadn't been much more snow in the night, it was cold and it cut you. It is wind that can kill you in the open, not cold, because wind chills and reduces temperature by convection, so you need a windproof layer of clothing or a shelter to stop it. The best fabric is Gore-Tex, which is what Peppa's Helly Hansen is made out of. Gore-Tex stops wind, but is breathable, so it allows moisture from the body to pass through it in one direction only, and you don't get moisture build-up on the inside of your layers, which could freeze in very cold conditions, and that would also kill you eventually. Our fleeces were windproof too, and I put on another sweatshirt over my t-shirt, and checked shirt, and then my fleece, and Peppa had a purple lambswool jumper she put on under her fleece, which creates layers to trap air and keep you warmer. Soon I would make her a hat out of rabbit skin, but I gave her my beanie and she already had gloves. We went towards the burn, me with the air gun and Peppa brought the slingshot. I took the backpack with the pellets and Belvitas and raisins and the map and the compass and 2 waterproofs in case of precipitation, and I had worked out a route that went along the top of the valley where the loch was, up and over, then skirted most of the moor round Magna Bra. It was 4 miles and it would bring us back to our wood at the top. It was mostly along the edge of the woods and bits of forestry planting, and some bits were in the open on the moor. It was 4 miles, and I thought it would take us all day because we were going to walk and not run. Also, the first long bit along the valley was south-facing, so there would be less snow, which would come in from the north. We were also going to stop and try to shoot birds if we could. There was still stratus and still a north wind, but it was less and more of a breeze. After we crossed the burn and went through the woods, we found a deer path in the snow that led all along the valley top. It looked like there was a small herd of red deer, and they might have been females, and the path was recent, and there were droppings, and we just followed it. I kept scanning all around and listening, and Peppa walked in front of me. If we saw anyone, or heard a helicopter, or a car, or a ranger's truck, we were going to drop and get straight into the forest. So we kept close to it, just on our right, and the deer had done the same thing. They don't like being too far away from cover. Sparrowhawks fly low and fast along the ground and hunt in woods, and they eat songbirds. Red kites fly high and circle, and sometimes they circle carrion, like vultures in Africa, because that is mostly what they eat, and they do hunt rabbits and voles and rats. Golden eagles fly high too, but they can see prey from almost 2 miles away, and when they start to descend to make a kill, they go almost as fast as a peregrine falcon, which is the fastest living creature on planet Earth. They like to roost in high places like trees and rocky crags, and sometimes on fence posts at the top of moors, and in winter they eat mostly carrion, like kites. Most of the stuff I know from Wikipedia and websites about things I'm interested in, and also from YouTube videos and from TV. At school, I was in a special unit for vulnerable learners where I could be online most of the day, and I had to talk to Mrs. Finlayson about my feelings. I know a lot about survival, making fires and shelters, snaring food, making bird traps, filtering water, reading tracks and watching the weather. I also know a lot about British animals and most birds except seabirds. And fish. and amphibians and reptiles. I know about trees, and quite a lot of plants, especially if they're plants you can eat. I know the Latin names of all the native British trees. I also know about cooking and food hygiene, and quite a lot about health and common ailments, and alcoholism, which is a disease. I know how to nick stuff, and how to read timetables, and how to set up email accounts which you need if you're buying stuff on Amazon with dodgy cards. I also know how to use a drill and fit locks and doors. I can clean and hoover and make a healthy meal plan. I also know some bits of history, like the Indian Wars in the 1860s in the USA, the French Revolution, the Covenanters in the 17th century in Scotland, and the Battle of Stalingrad in the winter of 1943. I'm good at doing maths in my head, and I know all the times tables, so I can also divide and do fractions and percentages. I can shoot with an air gun and cast a fishing rod, but not a fly rod, which uses weighted line to get the fly out to the fish, and I have never done that. I can read a map, do grid references, plot a course with a compass, and work out elevations and gradients. I have killed one person, quite a lot of fish, and so far, two rabbits. The hardest thing about killing Robert was not doing it, or telling Peppa I was going to do it. It was telling Peppa what Robert had been doing to me, and how he said he was going to start doing it to her. When I told her, she said, "Kill him, Sal." And I said, "Aye." She was worried about Ma, but I told her the plan to lock her in the room so she wouldn't get the blame, and then to run and survive. And she said she'd only do it if we went back and got Ma after a year. So I said, "Okay, we would." She was pleased she wouldn't have to go to school, and she knew that if anyone found out about Robert, we'd get took and split up. Two boys in her class were fostered, and they were brothers, and they had a sister who was fostered in Edinburgh, and they only saw her in a family centre once a month, and she said, "Fuck that." I didn't want to tell Peppa about what Robert had done since I was 10, because she thought I was the best and cleverest and most brave person in the world, and she thought I knew everything, and I looked after her all the time and kept her safe. And if she knew about Robert, I thought it would make me look soft, and I should have bitten his cock off. When it started, I was more amazed than scared by the way he spoke and the smell of drink and weed off him, and his half-closed eyes kept coming back into my head for days afterwards. So did what he said about telling. Robert was skinny, and he had a little fluffy beard on his chin, and he smelled sour like vinegar, or he smelled a drink. He had tattoos on both his forearms, and a tattoo of a panther on his chest, and roses, and knives on his shoulder. He had veins that stood out on his arms, and on the side of his head near his temple, and his skin was grey and rough. Ma met him when she was lap dancing in a club in Glasgow, when I was 9 and Peppa was 6, and she'd lost her job at Cuts for not coming in, but she could still cut hair. She said she wanted to be a dancer, and she could dance, and she had brown hair and big tits, and she was pretty. Robert was the guy who dealt weed and pills to the girls in the club, and he also got stolen cards and could sometimes get you ones that got you cash from machines. One morning, there was £400 in 20s on the kitchen drainer, and I took 4 of them for food and a new backpack for Peppa for school. That was the day Robert first stayed, and Ma said, "This is Robert, Sal. He's my new boyfriend." And I stared at people, not because I don't like them or because I'm rude, but because I'd need to get a really good look at them, so I know. I stared at Robert, and he said, "Gie's a smile, Sally." And Ma went, "Smile, Sal." And I smiled with my mouth, but not my eyes, and he said, "That's better, Blondie. I know your da." And Ma said, "He did aye, Sal. He knew Jimmy." And Robert said, "Sally Brun. Sally Brun." I could have told him my name is not Sally, it's Sal Marina, which means sea salt in Spanish. And Ma thought it up when she was 16, and she thought it sounded classy, and like a kind of wine. Peppa's real name is Paula, but when she was wee, Ma used to call her her wee red Peppa because of her hair. And then we all started calling her Peppa with an A. And then Ma said we were salt and pepper, who are girl rappers from ages ago, because of my name and Peppa's new name. And we watch some of their videos, like Shake Your Thang and Push It. I think the words are about sex, but Peppa used to love them and stick out her arse and shake it about like they did in the videos. Peppa was called Paula after a saint and a pope because her dad was a Catholic. Robert started calling her Black Peppa because she was half African, which is racist, and it used to make Peppa go mad at him. He always was racist to her and called her half-breed and half a darky, and she called him a fucking twat. We've both got Ma's surname, Brown, although my dad's surname was Mazur because his papa's papa was Polish and he came to Scotland in the Second World War to build coastal defences. And Peppa's surname should be Adichie if she took her dad's name, which she might one day. Ma's first name is Claire, but when she was dancing, she said her name was Nicole, and sometimes she told people her name was Jordan. They didn't notice the 420s I took, and after that, whenever Robert was there, I noticed where he put his money or his wallet, and I robbed him when he was out of it. Soon he moved in. One day, he came up with a holdall and his air gun, and a fishing rod and some golf clubs. I was at the flat on my own, and Peppa was doing gymnastics at the centre, and I was going to get her. I heard the key in the door, and I thought it was Ma. And then Robert came in, lugging his holdall, and he said, I'm going to stay for a bit, all right? And I said, does Ma know? And he said, aye. She gave me the key. She got an afternoon shift at the club. Then he said, do I make us a cup of tea? And I said, no. And he said, oh, all right. Are we going to be pals? And I said, no. And then he said, you're tall, aren't you? And I said, aye. And then he said, do I spliff? I said no, and I had to go and get Peppa, and he started making a joint in the front room on the sofa. We stayed skirting the trees on the edge of the moor and followed the deer path all along, but we saw nothing we could shoot. Then we came to a gorge where another burn came down into the valley. There was a little waterfall there, and it plunged down into a pool with ribbon trees and hazels and small oaks around it. The water thundered, and you could hear it as you got nearer. As we got to the pool, a huge heron flew up and its wings went slow. Peppa shot a stone at it. It swerved in the air and carried on flapping down into the valley. We climbed up alongside the gorge and came out at the moor, where it goes up and the snow was sparkling, and there was dry grass sticking out of it and blowing in the wind. The sun was breaking the clouds up and they were skidding along on the wind, and when the sun came out there was a bright glare like headlights in your face off the snow. The snow was crunchy and had a thin layer of ice on the top and was about 15 centimetres deep. Peppa was squinting into the glare, and the whiteness of the bank we were climbing made me feel dizzy, and all you could hear was our feet crunching the snow. At the top there were big rocks, and we sat with our backs to them and ate Belvitas and raisins. We were looking out right across the valley, across the loch, and you could see all the different woods. Some were plantations and blocks, and we could see the forestry track going along the top on the other side and in and out of them. Then I heard Peppa whisper, Sal. She was lying on the snow, looking up past the rock we'd been leaning on, and she pointed. Further up and amongst little boulders were two grouse. They were both females and had grey and brown feathers with little black flecks, and they were pecking at heather where it had got no snow on it, at the sides of the boulders. I tried to move as slow as I could as I got the air gun up and lay flat by the rock. It was pumped 7 times and had a pellet in the breech. The grouse were close enough to hit, and the nearest one had its back to me, and I got the bead on the sight in the middle of its neck. You have to squeeze the trigger and hold your breath as you get your finger round it, and then release the breath slowly as you squeeze. When I shot and the gun went foot, both of them took off and made a noise like tick tick. But the one I shot flew forward and then smashed down on the snow and rolled over and over and then started running and flapping one wing out. I said, Peppa, get it. And she got up and ran towards it, and I followed. The grouse rang along, changing directions and going tick tick, and there was a little line of blood in the snow behind it. And it kept going with Peppa racing behind it and her feet stamping holes in the snow and me racing behind her holding the gun. The grouse was zigzagging all the time and Peppa kept slipping and stumbling. I was pumping the air gun trying to get another shot at it while it couldn't fly. One wing was trailing along the snow and the other was waving out and the blood trail in the snow followed it. Then it changed direction again and jumped and half took off and then crashed down again and rolled over and lay still. It still had its eyes open when I got to it, and it was breathing fast, and the blood on the snow around it looked black. I put another pellet in the breech and shot it straight in the head point blank so it didn't suffer, and its head thudded against the snow and more blood came out of the back of it. It was soft and warm and felt small and light when I picked it up and its head hung down. Peppa stroked it and said, "It's nice, isn't it?" I said, "Aye." Its feet were big and there were short claws and it had scales like a reptile because birds evolved from reptiles. Peppa said, "Do you feel bad about it?" And I said, "Aye." And I did, even though we were going to eat it. It was small and soft when you held it and its beak was small. And it had an orange bit over its eye that looked like eyeshadow, and it was pretty. We put the grouse in the backpack and carried on along and up onto the moor. Chapter 6. Town. There wasn't much meat on the grouse, and I let Peppa have most of it. But it was good with salt on it, roasted on the stones. We walked the whole moor right up to another hill and then back round, skirting right round Magna Bra. We didn't get any more birds, but we saw kites and geese flying over. We didn't see anyone, or any forestry 4x4s or helicopters. It was over 4 miles by the time we got back and collected wood and cooked the grouse. That night I told Peppa about the Covenanters in Scotland, who didn't want the English king's religion or bishops in the church, and who had meetings out in the moors and hills near Ayrshire and Galloway at night. They had preachers who wore masks and talked about God at secret meetings. And from 1680 until 1688, there was a time called the Killing Time, when the king sent soldiers down into this area and they massacred the Covenanters and made thousands of them go to Ireland. There was a woman called Margaret Wilson who wouldn't give up her religion, so they got her and some of the others and tied them to posts in the Solway Firth at low tide. They gave her the chance to say she loved the king and would go to his church, but she wouldn't, so they let the tide come in over her and she drowned. And Peppa said, "Why didn't she just say what they wanted?" And I said, "I don't know." And I didn't. I would have. It doesn't matter what church you go to. We never went to church, but we did some religion in school, and a minister came in at Easter and Christmas and went on about Jesus. Even Peppa said she would have just told them what they wanted, and her dad's a Catholic. I found out about the Covenanters on Wikipedia when I was reading about Galloway, and I saw the words, "the killing time," and googled them, and there were things about Margaret Wilson and all the killing in Galloway then. Next day, we washed our knickers and socks and t-shirts in the burn, and I made a clothesline out of saplings and paracord over the fire. I told Peppa we had to wash or we'd get dirty, and you can get body lice and infections, and Peppa said, "Aye, you're right, hen, I didn't want a fishy fanny," and I said, "Me neither." We got the fire going and built right up, and then I boiled the kettle and soaked her towel with hot water, and Peppa stripped off and washed herself all over and kept shivering and jumping going, "Ugh!" when I was rinsing and wringing the towel for her. She got a dry t-shirt on and hopped about by the fire till she was warm and dry and then got dressed. Then we boiled the kettle again and I stripped off. Peppa sat on a log watching me. The fire kept your front warm, but your back and arse froze in the breeze, which was still northerly. Peppa said, "You're getting pubes." I said, "Aye." She said, "I don't want them." "Well, you'll get them." She said, "Will mine be ginger?" And then I laughed. Sometimes she can make me laugh like that, like exploding and not knowing where it came from. And she was raging, I was laughing. It's all right for you. I'm going to have ginger pubes and they'll call me Ginger Pubes. Who will? Imagine that. They'll not. They won't see them. Aye, but they'll know because of my hair. Peppa, you're going to be beautiful, I said. She was pushing her chest together, trying to make a cleavage. She went, will I have tits like Ma with a cleavage? I said, I don't know. I haven't. Aye, but you're still growing yourself. Mine were tiny, like pimples, and I didn't wear a bra. I didn't need one. I didn't want big ones like Ma. Robert was always staring at them and grabbing them. I hadn't had a period yet either, but I thought I might sometimes when my belly got sore and swelled up, but I didn't. I knew what to do if I got it, and I had some Always Ultra in the rucksack and some non-perfumed wipes. I also had the ibuprofen and codeine for period pain. There were no rabbits in the snares, so we took them up and walked over from the first warren and found another one behind the ferns and oak trees nearer the lockside, and we set three more snares and left them. We went back to the bender and got more wood. The standing dry wood near us was all used up now, and we were having to drag it back from by the burner further up in our wood. I cut some more spruce branches for the top of the bender and for the bottom where the tarp didn't meet the ground. We had no meat or fish that night, and we ate cherry cake and walnuts and raisins. The wind changed. The northerly dropped and it came from the west and it was warmer. And as we lay in the bender, looking at the fire, we heard hisses and splashes and trickles of rain coming down hard. It was melting the snow and wet blobs of it were dropping off the tree branches. And after an hour or so, the fire was almost out and soaked and we could hear the burn rushing and churning with all the new water. I had stacked some wood in the bender to dry and I was glad. The bender didn't let in any rain and we fell asleep listening to it drumming down on us. Next morning, I got a little fire going right in the entrance of the bender and boiled the kettle, and while I was waiting for it to get light, I started worrying about the food. I still find it hard to work out how many days we'd been here or what day of the week it was. I thought, if it was a Wednesday when we ran, that would make it Sunday when we saw the helicopter, if that was 5 days after we ran. But I couldn't remember what we'd done every day, or how many nights I'd fallen asleep telling Peppa stuff. We'd had two rabbits, because we had two skins, and we'd had fish on 2 days and a grouse on 1 day. If I thought hard and counted, I worked out it could be a Wednesday or a Thursday today. We were short of food. If we didn't snare a rabbit or get fish again, we'd have to eat the last raisins and the brioches, and then we'd go hungry. I could go hungry, but Peppa couldn't, and I wouldn't let her. And I was trying to work out how much food we brought to see us through to when we could hunt and snare everything. I didn't want to, but I was thinking we maybe couldn't just eat what we caught or snared or dug up and that we needed more food. It would take me a whole day to get into the town and get food for another week, and I'd have to leave Peppa here, because they were looking for two of us, and by now they had descriptions, and maybe even CCTV from the train station, and they maybe even knew we used disguises. I had £105 in the rucksack left from the money we brought. The thought of leaving Peppa made me start to feel a panic. Peppa called out from the bed, any tea, Sal? And I said aye, and I made her some with a tea bag and UHT and sugar. I gave her three of the brioches for her breakfast, and she ate them in the bed as the sun was starting to come up. The rain was easing off, but the wind was still blowing in from the west and it was warm and damp. She said, snow's gone, Sal. All the washing's wet. It was, still on the line I made and all dripping. I said, I think I'm going to have to go and get more food, Peppa, and you can't come or we'll get caught. It'll take me all day, and you have to stay here and stay in the bender. She thought for a bit and then said, will you get me a book? I said aye, and she said, can I have the knife and the gun? I said aye. I'd pumped the gun and put a pellet in it, but she wasn't to shoot it unless it was an emergency and someone was attacking her. She said, I'll be scared, Sal. And I said, I know, and I went over and hugged her and whispered, you stay in the bender and don't go out. You'll be all right, and I'll be back before it's dark, she said. What if I need a wee? Aye, well, you can go to the latrine, but then come straight back in here and get in the bed and stay warm and wait for me, she said. Can I cut up the rabbit skins and make a hat? I can sew it. So I said aye, even though I thought she'd make a mess of it, and I told her to be careful with the knife and always cut away from her and do it on a stone in the bender. I got her the sewing kit with extra strong thread in it and I threaded her a big needle. I got the rabbit skins off the frame and brushed all the ash and wee and oak leaf off them and scrunched them up and rubbed them to try and get them soft. I gave her the knife and told her to keep it in the sheath when she wasn't cutting with it because the sheath had a sharpener on the inside. I left her the brioches and boiled water in the kettle and made her put on her purple jumper and her fleece. She'd been on her own in the flat before, when I was out getting things and Mo and Robert were in the pub or out in town, but she always had the telly then. I took the backpack and the map and the compass and the money. I left her in the bender, cutting at the rabbit skins. I didn't say goodbye or make a big thing of going. I just turned and went. For the first mile through the forest, I breathed steady and looked straight ahead and listened to my feet stamping on the leaves and twigs and brown larch needles. I was wearing my fleece and had the backpack and a hat with my hair up in it, and I thought I'd look like a lad out hiking because I had walking trainers and waterproof over trousers on too. If someone saw me, they'd think I was just a lad or a scout out in the forest. I went along through the forest and then crossed onto a moor bit with heather and went along the edge of a plantation until it came out at the bottom of a hill. And over the hill was the next valley, and then along the top of that was a slope going down to a forestry track that went along through more plantation spruce. So I didn't panic about Peppa. I thought about Ian Leckie. He was Mary's papa, and he looked after us when we were wee, and loved me. He was the only person who didn't think I was weird, and didn't say, "What are you staring at?" He was old, and he lived by the shore in a proper house with a garden and a shed. Even after I stopped going about with Mary, I used to go there and see him, and he called me Bonnie Sal. Ian Leckie taught me about fishing and tying knots, and he took me and Mary to the wall, and we caught a cod and a saithe on mackerel strip. He showed me how to gut mackerel, and he thought it was funny, I liked doing it, and he said, "There's no many lassies that'll do that, Sal." In his shed, he had tools and paint cans and varnish, and he made a hutch for Mary's rabbit. He told me about plywood and how it is so strong because they glue crossing grains and thin sheets and compress them. He taught me how to saw a bit of wood and keep your elbow in so you don't go off the line you're cutting. And he told me about how they use copper strip to stop barnacles and weeds growing on the bottom of fishing boats because they create an electrical current that stops them growing. When I was sad about Ma, or scared about Robert, or going to panic, I thought about Ian Leckie. And it made me feel calm and warm. And I think I might have loved him like he was my papa. Ian Leckie didn't drink. He said he'd been sober for 22 years. But before that he was on the drink all day and night and he got arrested for fighting. He used to go to meetings to stay sober and not drink with other people who didn't drink at the Fisherman's Hall. Once he met me and Ma and Peppa walking up from the precinct and Peppa was in a buggy and Ma had 3 bottles of cider in a carrier. He said, "Hello, Claire. How you doing, love?" And Ma said, "All right." And she seemed like she wanted to keep going. But Ian Leckie put his hand on her shoulder and said, "Are you doing all right, my love?" And Ma said, "Aye." And she was just wanting to get home and get the tea. Ian Leckie rubbed my head and said, "How's my Bonnie Sal?" And then he squatted down and put his hand on Peppa's cheek and said, "Look at my wee Peppa. What a bonny lassie." And she smiled at him, and she had no front teeth, and he clapped his hands and made his cheeks go all blown up at her, and she giggled. Ma said, "See you, Ian, come on, Sal." And Ian Leckie said, "I'm going up the wall on Saturday for cod, if Sal wants to come. She's a good gutter." Ma said, "Oh, Ian, we're out on Saturday, away to Glasgow to see my friend Joe. Come on, Sal." And she started back off up towards the flats. I knew we went out on Saturday, and I knew she didn't have a friend called Joe in Glasgow. My ma was a good liar. We got home, and she started on the cider, and me and Peppa watched telly. After that, when I saw Ian Leckie, or I went down to his house to go in his shed, he said, "How's your ma?" And I'd say, "All right." And then he'd say, "Is she still on the drink?" And I'd say, "Aye." And he'd say, "Tell her to come and see me if she needs a hand." But I didn't. She only really got angry and screaming if she had no drink, or if I hid it and she found it, or if I said to her not to drink it. She was all right when she got drunk, and then for a while she was soppy and wanted to cuddle us. And then sometimes she'd cry and start phoning people on her phone, and I'd get Peppa's tea and put her to bed. If I went back through, she was normally asleep, and you couldn't wake her, so I'd make sure her fag was out and cover her in a sleeping bag and go to bed or go online and read. Ma used to take a Stephen drink with Peppa in a buggy. She could only get wine or cans like cider and extra strong lager, because vodka and whiskey have got tags on them and they set off the alarm when you go